Orator at 1:15. Today is Monday, February 7th, and if the secretary can take the roll call, please.
Representative Cowdery?
Here. Here.
Representative Barnes is going to be back with the committee in a few minutes, and Representative Morgan is excused from Juneau until later. And I just want to welcome everybody here for the meeting today. The item that we have before us is Senate Bill 7, it's increased land grant to University of Alaska, and we do have a CS in front of us, and would like to hear a motion to accept the version that we have.
Madam Chair, I would move the House Committee substitute for Senate Bill Number 7 Resources, 72/S version before the committee for discussion.
Is there any objection? Hearing none, then we do have the revised version in front of us, and I'd like to begin your testimony and state your name.
Thank you. My name is Lorelei Meyer. I'm staff to the House Resources Committee, and I will explain the changes that we have made to Senate Bill 7. Starting on page 5, line 3, in current statute, the municipalities can only select vacant, unappropriated, and unreserved land, which is called VUU land, within their boundaries. But the university is allowed to select any land within their boundaries. So the change made on page 5, line 3, will bring the university on the same selection level as the municipalities. When talking with DNR, we learned that there are only 7 municipalities, mostly in Western Alaska, who have not selected most of their land. This could be from a number of reasons. So we tried to make the changes specific to those 7 municipalities by setting the requirement that unless the municipalities have at least 80% of their land entitlement, the university is only allowed to select VUU lands within their boundaries. And in the case of the Lake and Peninsula Borough, the entitlement is greater than the VUU land available. Continuing on to page 6, line 20. The change here basically protects public interest in special lands. An example is given with Cape Yakutaga and how the university logged there on a thin strip between mountain and ocean, and it destroyed a lot of habitat area. So now the universe, or the legislature rather, by this change, it will protect the public interest in those lands. Page 7, line 23, this protects public access to university conveyed lands, as does the change on page 8, line 31 through page 9, line 5. And in that section right there listed on page 9, line 6, management requirements for university land, the university will have the same mineral management requirements as on state land. And a similar change is made in the final change to this bill on page 13, line 22. The university will be subject to riparian management standards as required on the state lands under the Forest Practices Act. So 100-foot buffers on all anadromous streams south of the Alaska Range and on coastal forest areas. So I think I went quite quickly through that, so I can go back and answer specific questions if you need to.
Representative Cowdery.
In the privatization work that we did this summer, one of the recommendations was for the governor to endow the university with $250,000 1,000 acres of land, and also try to get a federal match for that. Murkowski was very much in favor of this, and so I think that, in case you didn't know, this is my recommendation. I think that the, or one of, well, I made this recommendation, is to also try to get the federal to match what, you know, to give them as much bang for their buck as they can do.
Also included in your packet, Representative Cowdery, is a copy of the federal legislation currently in Congress right now, both Congressman Young's and Senator Murkowski's. And Jim Pound from Senator Taylor's office can probably explain those better than I can. And how the SAFE bill coincides with the federal legislation.
And for the record, Representative Kastner has joined the committee. Is there any other questions regarding the revised? Representative Barnes?
I was here already.
Present.
You weren't.
Yes, you had to leave shortly. Is there any other questions for the committee aid? Hearing none, thank you. We have some teleconference sites that are going to be online, and we have some people that are signed in here in Juneau to testify as well.
Representative Hudson. Will the prime sponsor have someone to speak about the amendments, or so we can hear how they feel about the amendments that have just been introduced to the committee?
Yes, if you can step forward with your name and affiliation with the record.
My name is Jim Pound from Senator Taylor's office, Legislative Aid. I apologize, I just actually got a copy of these about 15 minutes ago, so especially on the amendments. Some of which we had discussed prior to, and some of them were answered, actually, critical habitat having a definition, which we were concerned about earlier. The riparian requirements are a little bit redundant since all land in the state of Alaska now falls under the Alaska Forest Act, whether you want to have them in there or not. But as I understand it, all lands right now that are put up for timber sale have to meet these requirements. So putting it in this legislation is just repeating what is already in existence. That's basically, I would think, my comments on the amendments at this time. to explain a little bit about a background about the bill in particular, certainly not the first time this has been passed around the Capitol building. It's been in existence off and on for probably 10 or 15 years. Initially, it goes back to 1915 when the university, or then the College of Agriculture and Mining, was established as a land-grant college. The land that was granted to the college more or less became property of the state under the Statehood Act. There was an assumption, I'm gathering, for lack of a better word, by Congress that we would transfer that land ultimately back to the university once it's on its standards. So far, 40 years later, we still haven't done that. The purpose of it is primarily to give the university the land grants that it was promised by the federal government prior to statehood. Now we stand in a position, if you look in your packets, I do have a copy of both the Senate and House bill from the congressional side. They're identical bills. That includes 250,000 acres from the federal government. Part of that is a cleanup where land that was conveyed to the university is now in national parks or national wildlife refuges. They will do a little flip-flop there in order to get that land back in the proper hands and get it back to the university. There is also in that, on the last page of that, a clause that will do two things. First of all, it'll make it a little bit more sellable for our delegation in Washington because it's a show of good faith on behalf of the state for 250,000 acres. And there's also a clause in this legislation that will pass that, which ultimately means the state, the university could end up with 750,000 acres, 500,000 of that coming from the federal government, which will, if nothing else, get federal land back into state hands. I don't have any hard numbers on this. I'm hoping that Wendy from the university can, probably if she's on the line, give us harder numbers. The money will go into a trust account that will be drawn on primarily by as an interest situation similar to an Alaska Permanent Fund, but specifically designed for the university. Currently, the budget request from the governor for the university is $189,301,800. It's hopeful that if the university has this land available to it, given a, I would consider, fairly conservative estimate of $1,500 an acre, again, not a land baron, so I don't understand that, at 60% of the sale, it should produce somewhere in the area of around $74 million annually if the land, if 60% of the land is made available to the private sector. There are advantages for the municipalities that in some cases where a municipality is dealing with land that they really don't have the ability to develop or the ability to get out there and get it sold, but I think the university may have a better resource in order to do that. It also is helpful to the municipalities because if that land is moved out into the development status, it will create a tax base for municipalities that they currently do not have from just raw land. That is basically my comments.
Okay. Representative Harris.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Jim, can you tell us what the policy and the practices of the university right now with the lands they have for development or revenue enhancement to the university?
My understanding, Representative, at the current time, they have the land they have available out is generating around $32 million annually to their revenue source. Again, I did not get a chance because we always kept missing each other for whatever reasons with Wendy to sit down and talk the actual crunch numbers on that.
So, so do you have a projected, or does the university have any kind of a projected revenue stream if they get not only the 250 1,000 acres from the state, but the same from the federal government or more?
I don't have any actual hardcore numbers. The biggest problem is a lot of it has to do with what the land is used for. If the land is sold to you or I to build a house on, it's worth one value. If it's sold for timber, it's worth another value. If it's a mineral situation, then it has another value to it. So it's kind of a juggle depending on what you hit there, so to speak.
So the university is a wonderful country. So the university does have the option to sell the land if that's what they feel is...
Yes. As I understand the way the bill is written, they should have the ability to transfer that land to private ownership.
Are there any further questions? Representative Barnes?
And I know the answer to this, although I don't, or at least I've heard the answer in the past, and I don't recall all of it at the moment. Why is the federal bill in any way tied to an amount of land being made available to the university from the state? Or from what I read in the federal bill, there's X number of acreage that will come from the federal government, and then if the state of Alaska should make 250,000 acres available, then the federal government would make another 250,000. Am I reading that correctly?
That's the way I understand it from talking to Congressman Young's office.
And, Mr. Chairman, if I may, and why, since it is a land-grant university and the land is supposed to be transferred from the federal government, why has Congress elected in any way to tie the amount of land transferred to that land that would be transferred from the state?
As I understand from Congressman Young's office, again, first of all, this particular piece of legislation is a good faith effort on behalf of the state. There is an assumption in Congress that land was transferred to the state of Alaska upon statehood and that the state of Alaska should be transferring it to the university to continue the process.
Mr. Chairman, if I might, but it is a fact that if we, in fact, transfer the 250,000 acres, there is no guarantee the federal government would transfer any land. Isn't that true?
Absolutely. These bills are in Congress and could end up anywhere.
Have been for as long as I can remember. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Are there any further questions? Hearing none, thank you. Okay, we have the I'm joined by Wendy Redmond. She's online, but I'm going to go ahead and move to the teleconference in Fairbanks. We have Mr. Dave Lacey.
Yes. Are you ready for me?
Yes, if you can state your name and your affiliation for the record and begin your testimony.
Yes, my name is Dave Lacey. I'm representing myself, and I'm a resident here at Fairbanks, box 81765-99708. And I'm opposed to Senate Bill 7 for the following three reasons. I believe that the land disposals out in rural Alaska hurt the residents of rural Alaskans out there because they put more people out competing for the limited subsistence resources, damage the rural economy, and put more people out who will qualify under the federal ANILCA laws as rural residents and therefore eligible for hunting privileges that in case of resource shortages. So I'm opposed for that reason. I also believe, and based on the university's past land management practices, that SB 7 will promote rapid exploitation of our resources and not a more value-added type of development that will support the local economies. And I believe that a more value-added development will be better for us in Alaska here in the long run. I don't believe that we need, I'm an alumnus of the University of Alaska here in Fairbanks, and I support the university in a strong educational system, but I believe it should be funded out of the general funds and not this way. And the third reason is that I believe this whole land selection process that the university is going to have to go through is going to be very cumbersome, very expensive, very long and drawn out, and ultimately just a big burden. It would be so much more efficient to just go ahead and appropriate the money from the general funds that the university needs every year like the president has been requesting. Thank you very much for the opportunity to testify here.
Thank you, Mr. Lacey. Are there any questions? Representative Cowdery?
Yes, you know, the state has quite a bit of land that they were disposed of earlier or that they acquired through foreclosures and things like this. What would you think about making this land available, this type of situation? They have quite a few acreage of land that they have acquired. The state has required through foreclosures and things. I think there's 5,000 parcels.
Well, I'm not sure. I'd have to look at it further. Again, my concern, like I said, is sticking people into rural areas that are compete for the resources. And also, it's been our experience up here too, sir, that people move into these rural areas, and after a little while, they want services. They want electricity out there. They want roads out there. And anyways, and we can't afford that.
Well, that's what they said in 1950 to the chair when I came to Alaska about homesteads, but I think if we hadn't had homesteading in them days and eventually got services, we probably wouldn't have had many of the communities that are here, especially in the rail belt areas. So that's more of a comment than a question. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Are there any other questions?
Madam Chair.
Thank you. Okay, thank you, Mr. Lacey. We're going to move to Anchorage. Mr. Bob Loeffler, I don't know if I said your name right, but if you could repeat your name and affiliation for the record and begin your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Bob Loeffler. I'm the director of DNR's Division of Mining, Land, and Water. This bill, which appropriates state land and subsurface resources and the revenues from them to the University of Alaska, is very similar to bills passed by the legislature in 1995, 96, and actually 1959. Each time those bills have been vetoed, including the 1959 version, which was vetoed by Governor Bill Egan. Therefore, it will come as a little surprise to you today that I am, in fact, testifying in opposition to SB 7. I've got a couple of points and would like to take just a few minutes of your time. The first and most important point is that this bill would set the university in competition with the with new municipalities that we all hope will be forming in the unorganized portion of Alaska. It also has them in competition with existing municipalities. I'd like to expand on that for a second. While all of us are aware that the state has tremendous acreage, only a very small amount of that land produces revenue. As a result of the Mental Health Trust litigation and settlement process and the effort to convey municipal entitlement to existing munis for their commercial, residential, and industrial uses, we found that there's minimally viable development land. That is, a small portion of our land is useful for development. And since the purpose of SB 7 is to convey those lands to the university for revenue generation purposes, it only follows that the university will select the most productive lands. As many of us know, as many of you know, half of Alaska remains in the unorganized borough. A university entitlement will make it very difficult for future boroughs to receive any development entitlement lands. This is a serious issue for the state, as the lack of good lands will remove one of the few remaining incentives for municipal incorporation, should they ever be required to incorporate. This bill may ensure that they have no good tax base with which to generate revenues to support themselves. In short, with respect to the unorganized borough, this is an appropriation not from the general fund or not from the state to the university, but in fact from new boroughs which may in fact incorporate to the university. The second half of this is competition with existing municipalities. While the amendment on line 5, I believe, goes quite far to eliminate some competition with municipalities, in fact, the university would still get a lot of land that the municipalities would otherwise go to the existing municipalities. And this is true for two reasons. First, entitlements have a tendency to be an iterative process. They select, things change, we reject, they select new ones. And at the point the university jumps in, they then become ahead in line. Second, we would expect the university to get theirs first, since they're funded to get theirs, and the municipalities, for the most part, are not. So I believe that the competition with new municipalities, and secondly with existing ones, is a serious disadvantage to this bill. The second point is that I believe that this bill will have a significant and adverse impact on development of the state. Let me give you a few examples, and I guess the reasons are twofold. First, the first example I'd like to use is, as we're all proud of, there has been a mining claim boom in this state, and a boom in the mining industry, more or less since the settlement of municipal lands, the Mental Health Trust. That is, a fixed and understandable land ownership is critical for development, and I believe that this would introduce an element of confusion into that. Second, especially in the unorganized boroughs, this would allow the universities to select lands basically to make money off of development projects. And let me give you a few examples. As many of you know, the Pogo mine is in process of permitting. Well, we don't know whether or when it would be permitted. The university would have no impediment to selecting the only available access routes. Thus, in fact, Tech Corporation would be negotiating not only with the state, but with the university on royalties. Second example would be Donlin Creek, where should that ever go, and that's on native land, the only access is from state land, which is in fact selectable under this process. So that you could expect then, rather than the relatively, you could expect that the mining company would be negotiating with the university. And I believe that this could occur throughout the state. The third is the impact on what I'd call sort of rural issues. That is, throughout, the bill allows selection of any land in the rural areas except for, in this amendment, those especially critical to the maintenance of fish and wildlife species. And I don't have that wording exactly. But in rural areas throughout the state, there is no impediment to the university selecting areas for traditional use, subsistence, all of the things used by the local publics that, in fact, municipalities were forbidden to select. And so I believe that this would exacerbate the sort of rural rail belt tensions that unfortunately exist in this state. The fourth problem is its impact on state programs. Assuming that the university would select timber lands and lands for land sales, one would assume that they would select the lands either with respect to timber closest to existing access or with respect to land sales that are closest to being sold. That would probably have a significant effect to reduce or eliminate the near-term timber and land sale program, although certainly in the long term these programs, there are other lands to sell. I have two more points, and I appreciate the time, Madam Chairman. I would note in section H on page 7 that there is what appears to be a constitutional confusion, and that is, while I haven't talked to the Department of Law because this was just pointed out, it appears that the land in this bill is state land in the sense that it includes subsurface resources. But Section H on page 7 appears to exempt university land from many of the requirements of the Constitution. As you know, if the land is state land, in fact, the law cannot exempt state land, that is, the legislature cannot exempt state land from constitutional requirements. And two requirements in particular I'd like to point out. The first is sustained yield. While I believe there's some controversy as to whether trust land gained from the federal government is required to be managed according to sustained yield timber harvest, there is no doubt that state land is. The second is land from the federal government doesn't have the same public notice and meaningful public involvement requirements that the Constitution imposes on us, but there is no doubt in my mind that this land would have those requirements. Thus, the university would not, if I'm correct, and I do believe we need to check with the Department of Law, that the university would not be allowed to dispose of this land without complying with the public notice and public involvement requirements that the court has found in the Constitution. And the last point is, in fact, that I believe this bill will be is relatively expensive and an unwise use of state money. That is, our conservative estimates that it will cost more than $1 million per year for at least 10 years. While the bill provides that these costs will be borne by the university, there are still state monies that could be best spent operating the university rather than transferring lands from one state agency to another. Furthermore, there's some timing implications. The money to transfer the land comes up front. The revenue comes later. Especially in today's budget environment, paying costs today where the revenues don't come in for many years, a decade or so, could certainly be a problem. So this bill spends money and reduces the appropriation flexibility for the legislature. I believe that money would be better spent funding the university directly. Madam Chairman, thank you very much for this opportunity. I'm available if you have any questions.
Thank you. We do have a question. Representative Calentrese.
Thank you. You stated earlier that you're concerned with land in rural Alaska that would be possibly taken, and also that would require services. We give right now lots of services, is my understanding, if I read the budget right, to rural Alaska for services now. And also, you've got a lot of other assumptions that are your assumptions and not mine, and I don't think they're based on facts. I think they're just your assumptions. You know, the railroad, for instance, a good example, is exempt from property taxes, exempt from fuel taxes, vehicle license taxes, and that is a state-owned entity, and it seems to me that the some accommodations as far as the with the university would give them an opportunity to benefit rather than state dollars. Really, if you look at the, I think that if we had all the money in the world, I would certainly want to fund with all the things. But we've got other priorities. We've got a lot of a large HES budget. We've got a lot of other priorities that are high priorities also. And so just to say, well, we're going to, I could ask you, what should we cut in order, if we're budget short, what would you recommend that we cut that we're funding now that to get the money for the university?
Madam Chairman, Representative Cowdery, with respect to cutting money now, I believe that this bill would require money to be spent now that should be, this is a cost, not a revenue in the near term, because it costs money to transfer land, and any revenue, if any, would come in the long term. So I believe that this bill, certainly in the short term, is a cost. And I'm not sure if that answers your question, sir.
Thank you.
Representative Cowdery. Representative Whitaker.
Thank you. Madam Chair, if I might be given some leeway here, I have a couple of questions. One will follow the other, if I might, please.
Yes.
Thank you. Mr. Leffler.
Sir.
Yes, I know you're there. I'm trying to couch this without being overly aggressive.
I won't be insulted.
Good. Thank you. Were you instructed to convolute a rationalization for a predisposed position?
Madam Chairman, Representative Whitaker, no, sir.
I see. So if I might then follow up, you've come to these conclusions logically based upon the facts. Is that correct?
I believe so, sir.
Yeah.
I'm happy if my logic isn't clear, I'm happy to elaborate on it. Or if I made mistakes, I hope that I'm happy to admit them.
Okay. Then perhaps we can go there, Madam Chair, if I may, please. Your first item of opposition related to a competition for land with unorganized areas. And how many areas are in the process of currently organizing that you're aware of?
I mean, none are currently, I don't know of any areas, Madam Chairman, Representative Whitaker, I don't know of any areas before the Local Boundary Commission, although I guess I wouldn't know, but I suspect there are very few. Our concern is really for the long term. We hope that many of them organize.
And are you manifesting those hopes in any way?
No, sir.
Okay, well, that being the case, then, one would come to the logical conclusion that if none are organizing and if the administration is not facilitating organization, that then if that is a reason for opposing land to the university under its land grant status, that would then be postponed indefinitely. That seems somewhat illogical. Would you not agree?
There have been a number of mandatory... Madam Chairman, Representative Whitaker, there have been a number of mandatory borough bills that have been introduced, and it is certainly it's certainly feasible that such will be introduced and passed in the future. But I agree that these lands are in trust, that ability to do some of this management is in trust for future municipalities. But it is certainly the legislature's choice if they should decide to give it the university for instead.
Thank you. If I might follow up, Madam Chair. Your second logical conclusion was that an adverse impact on development to the state would result, and there would be confusion in development. I find that a tremendous leap of logic in that the university has as its mandate to develop these lands. Now, how is it that an organization that is mandated with developing lands for their own benefit and for the benefit of the state would somehow have an adverse impact on development?
Sir, I think that my conclusion stems in two ways. First, it stems from experience with the Mental Health Land Trust. I think there is no doubt that the Mental Health Land Trust has a fiduciary responsibility to develop those lands. That they are, but yet there is no doubt that the Mental Health Land Trust had an impact that we all regret on the development of the state. The second is through development projects that I'm personally involved with. An example being, I will use the Donlin Creek Mine, and that is, if there are two landowners involved, or three in this case, the state public domain and the university, the more landowners, the more difficult it is. But I think, and so those are the source of my comments. Madam Chair, Mr. Whitaker,
I appreciate your logic, Madam Chair. If I might then continue, this won't take too much longer. On that particular point, then, would it not be a logical assertion that given one of the two landowners being absolutely motivated to develop those lands, that that might enhance the development, that might serve as a catalyst rather than an inhibitant? Mere speculation,
Madam Chairman,
but it is a question.
Madam Chairman, typically the second owner, landowner acts as a tax. That is, in my, well, we're certainly working with, the Mental Health Trust and the and looking at the Ryan Lode and True North deposits, the source of the Mental Health Trust, it's financial. It costs money, and their motivation may be money, where in some cases ours is jobs. And so that's a slightly change, sir.
Well, I would not argue with specifics, but generally speaking, I think that there is a lack of logic in the assertion that given the advantages of development to the university, that it would be adverse to development. If I might then continue, Madam Chair, with regard to the assertion that an investment, if you will, by the university in itself, that would be a result of this bill is somehow adverse to the budget. I find that amazing when, in fact, at the urging of the administration, the legislature has passed innumerable bills that relate to a future investment, and now you're telling us that that is not a wise course to follow. Again, that's not a question because I've reached the point that I'm not asking questions anymore. I continue to assert that this is a convoluted rationalization to shore up a predisposed politically motivated position. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Whitaker. Are there any more questions for Mr. Loeffler?
And who is he with again?
CNR.
Yes, I do, Madam Chair, if I might.
Representative Barnes.
Sir, I would direct your attention to Article 8, Section 1 in the Constitution, Statement of Policy. It is the policy of this state to encourage the settlement of its lands and development of its resources by making them available for maximum use consistent with the public interest. So my question to you, sir, is what is the state doing to fulfill Section 1 of Article 8 at this time?
Madam Chairman, Representative Barnes, I believe that almost all of the state's programs are intended specifically toward that end at DNR.
Could you please enumerate what those programs are, land disposal programs that we presently have going on?
Our programs would be the land disposal programs, the permitting programs, mariculture, set-net leases, trapping cabins, oil and gas, our mineral programs, our timber harvest programs, our transportation, municipal entitlements, land disposal, and if I mention some twice, I regret, and I'm probably left some out.
And Madam Chair, if I might, I would like, sir, rather than generalization, could you please give me specific land disposal programs that are presently going on? And I've had many complaints over the question of mariculture, so I guess I'd like to know what you're doing to resolve the problems that presently exist with mariculture.
Well, with respect to land disposal programs going on, In fiscal year 2001 coming up, we expect to have three new subdivisions, about 100 remote parcels. And we have a lottery program, a remote essentially we have a subdivision program and a remote recreation program that we expect to do in 2001 to the extent we have funding available. With respect to mariculture, we have a series of best interest findings that should be coming out next week to provide essentially leases for the people we believe qualify under the mariculture program, and we've been working extensively with Fish and Game and the applicants over the last year, sometimes successfully, sometimes not, to try to resolve the mariculture problem.
Well, if I may, Madam Chair. Sir, having been here a long time and watched the whole issue surrounding land disposal, I'd like you to tell me how much land has been disposed of by the state for utilization by its people, say, over the last 5 years.
Madam Chairman, I can't give you the last 5 years off the top of my head, but frankly, it hasn't been that much. Since statehood, it's been about 400,000 acres. In the last 20 years, since 1980, since the advent of modern land disposal programs, it's been around 180,000, 190,000, not counting the home site, homestead programs, and not counting large agricultural disposals.
I'm very aware of the large agricultural disposals, so let's set those aside and discuss instead land other than that that has been made available for agriculture. Could you give me some general idea?
Madam Chairman, Representative Barnes, within the last 5 years?
That would do.
Madam Chairman, and Representative Barnes, this is Dick Milius with the Division of Land and or Mining, Land and Water Management. And specifically, we've had three land sales in the last, 4 years, which were reoffering parcels that were previously surveyed and subdivided. The total amount of parcels sold is probably about 500 or 600.
That's ag?
No, non-agricultural parcels.
Okay.
And the reason we don't have a bigger land disposal program is simply a function of budget, that we have not been funded significantly for land disposals since the late 80s, and the division, the former Division of Lands budget is about 40% of what it was 6 years ago.
Madam Chair, just one follow-up, if I could, please, and I appreciate it. The land that has previously been surveyed and identified, I don't believe you need a huge budget for that, since it's land that has been previously surveyed, and I'd like to know how much of that you have available at this time to make available to the public.
Madam Chairman, this is Bob Leffler again, Representative Barnes. I believe that we have 5,000 parcels, which encompass approximately 50,000 acres. The two things that need to be done, or the three things that need to be done to make that available again, is one, we have to do title searches on it within DNR to make sure that something hasn't happened. That's a relatively inexpensive process. The second thing, which I think we need to do, is reappraisal. Most of the, about 1,000 of them are old home sites that were never appraised, and the rest, many of the appraisals are out of date. State law requires appraisal within 2 years. We're trying to work out a system where we could do a limited appraisal, and if we're able to do that, I believe that we could put that land up for somewhere between $12 and $40 per acre, including the title search, reappraisal, and whatever other administration we need to do.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay, Representative Cowdery.
Following up a little bit on Representative Barnes' question about the last five-year disposal, what's happened, I know it's hitting you cold, and could you give us maybe at our next meeting or within the next week on paper? what that's been, and then what your program is for the next 5 years on disposal. How many acres and things of that nature as complete as you can?
Madam Chairman, Representative Cowdery, I would be delighted to do that, sir. I think it would be. I would have that to you within a week without problem. But I will say that to some extent, our land disposal program is driven by budget. While it takes, while it makes money, it makes more than it costs, we can't keep that money. And so the amount of land we put up is in part dependent upon the budget we have to do that, even though we can make that money back within a year in some cases. So I'm happy to give you that. I look forward to doing so. But please be aware, our projections for 5 years is very budget dependent.
What percent of Cowdery?
Yeah, you say it's. Who is the we that you refer to that can't keep the money?
We would be the division or department, in the sense that funds that come in from land disposal flow to the general fund.
That's true.
And so, the cost to put that land up is the money that was appropriated by the legislature. And then the income, for the most part, goes back to the general fund.
I understand that. That's why I don't see any way that the, except through the appropriation process, that DNR could get the money.
Nor would I recommend any, sir. My apologies if that implication was there.
Thank you. And I'd appreciate a report.
Okay. Are there any other questions? Hearing none, thank you for your testimony, and we'll move here to Juneau. We have Sue Schroeder. You can step up and state
my testimony in your packet. Alaska Conservation Voters was formerly Alaska Conservation Voice. We're a not-for-profit organization. We have 40 member organizations within our coalition currently. We represent over 21,000 registered Alaskan voters. We believe that the investment in the university system is critical for the state's economic prosperity. I am an alumna of the university. And we support funding that will guarantee the continued strong university system. Like many other folks, I just had a few minutes to review the committee substitute, and I'm very pleased to see some of the changes in the committee substitute, particularly those requesting consultation with Fish and Game and those acknowledging the riparian buffers. However, we still have many concerns with SB 7. Many of those are similar to what you heard expressed by DNR. I think to put it most simply, we feel that the university's full attention needs to be directed towards education, where it has its expertise, and that it should not be diverted towards this very complex and, as we all know, very contentious area of land management and land stewardship. I think there are other more effective, viable ways of funding the university, particularly in view of the fact that their funding needs are imminent. And has already been pointed out, this land giveaway is going to be years before the university will really be able to reap much economic benefit from it. I think this legislation has a lot of impact on Alaskans, particularly rural Alaskans, as has already been mentioned. It's going to take away many opportunities to capitalize on the natural resources and assets that we have. We can look to the past management of university land to see that there is great incentive for the university to quickly liquidate the resources on their land. It's not a particularly sustainable nor value-added process. Because of that lack of value-added, this bill may have deleterious impacts to local economies. And again, looking at past history of the university and the way it's managed its land, we have seen, particularly in respect to Yakutaga area, that the timber assets were quickly liquidated, and some of the provisions made to the local communities were not upheld as far as local hire. point, we're pleased to see access issues addressed in the new committee substitute. However, I'm not sure to what extent the current provisions will protect access when the university chooses to sell its land to third parties, get the land into private ownership. I think that the access issue should still be of concern to all Alaskans. Access has been an important issue for this legislature for several years, and I'm not sure that even with the current language in the bill that access will be protected. I'll let you read some of our other comments there that you have before you. In summary, we certainly have great support for the university and for getting sufficient funding for the university, but we are indeed very opposed to using this method, this land giveaway method, for trying to obtain the necessary funds to keep the university system viable. Any questions? Madam Chair.
Representative Barnes.
Thank you. And my first question is, you are aware of the state budget deficit?
Madam Chair, Representative Barnes, yes.
And so, therefore, where would you propose that we as a state get the money to fund the university at the level they request?
Madam Chair, Representative Barnes, I have followed all the budget discussions for many, many years, and if I had those answers, I probably wouldn't be sitting here. I would be sitting somewhere a bit more influential position. I think just one possible consideration is the September 14th vote. I know personally the way I voted on that was not a directive to the legislature never to touch the permanent fund. I think other folks that I have talked to would also say that with a careful approach to using some of the permanent fund earnings, I think that's a very valid use of those funds to help support the university system.
Madam Chair, if I might continue. It's interesting to me to hear the conservation voice or the conservation voters now raise the question of access to these lands, especially since I believe traditionally you have opposed funding for RS 2477 identification of lands and the opening up of those RS 2477 right-of-ways. Does that mean that now Alaska Conservation Voice will change its position and support the RS 2477 right-of-ways?
Madam Chair, Representative Barnes, probably not. There are access, many aspects to the access issues, and RS 2477 is just one of those. And no, I don't think, depending on the form in which it may be presented, that we could support that. That's not to say that, that our members have any less interest in maintaining appropriate access by appropriate means to public land.
Madam Chair, Mike, could you identify what you mean by appropriate access?
Madam Chair, Representative Barnes, that would obviously vary given to whom you're speaking, even amongst our membership. I think you're all very aware of a lot of the issues that surround motorized versus non-motorized. It has to be taken on a case-by-case, area-by-area basis. There's certainly some public lands that lend themselves very well to all types of access, including motorized. There are other public lands for a variety of reasons, mainly habitat protection and conflicting use. It is better to look at a more controlled form of access. But it should be done on a site-by-site basis.
Well, I'm really sorry to hear that you've, if I might, Ms. Madam Chair, if you've not changed your mind and would support RS 2477 access. So one final thing. Does it mean also that the Alaska Conservation Voters or Conservation Voice would support logging as long as we had value added in the state?
Madam Chair, Representative Barnes, as you know, well, as you may know, one of our 40 organizations is the Southeast Alaska Conservation Council, who have always supported a sustained value-added timber industry in Southeast. Certainly, again, in portions of Alaska, Alaska Conservation Voters would support a sustained value-added timber industry. Again, it's difficult when you're trying to compare, say, the boreal forest around Fairbanks to our temperate rainforest down here in Southeast. And again, our support of a logging industry would be dependent on where geographically that is.
Madam Chair, one final thing. I would just note for the record, I have never once ever heard anyone from any of the conservation organizations support logging anywhere in the state at any time. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Cosby.
Thank you. You know, some statements were made about the cost of disposal and it takes funding. I don't think you said that. I think the speaker before you require funding. And I'd just like your opinion. Could the private sector do this disposal program without any cost to the state?
Madam Chair, Representative Cowdery, personally, I don't have that information. I'm not knowledgeable in the economics that would be involved in that to answer your question fully.
The reason there's a Federal's Activities Inventory Reform Act, that's in the shortest, FAIRA, and it gives a definition of an inherently government function. And that function is a function that is so intimately related to public interest as to require its performance by federal, what this says, government employees, but it could say state employees, too. And so I don't think the disposal of the land would fit that category. This is the Federal Activities Inventory Act. And so I think... Well, I don't know if you agree with that or not.
Madam Chair, Representative Cowdery, I think it's certainly something that may bear looking into and consideration.
It seems to me that, you know, we're looking for areas, Madam Chair, to say where we could find some money for good causes. And I think one area that I would hope that we could get the legislature to look at is a lot of the activities that the state thinks that they're the only ones can do, that the private sector could do at a cost saving. And I know a good example, I have some acreage, and I've had acreage in the state for a long time, and I sold some, and I got... the money out of it. Then I went to the private sector to let somebody else that knew how to dispose and sell land, and I increased by about 50% of my return after paying them a commission than I had tried to do it before. So I agree with you that the university is not set up, or the state are qualified to set up this disposal program, but I believe the private sector, that's what they do. That's their stuff. That's what they should do. Thank you.
Is there any further questions for Ms. Schrader? Not. Thank you for your testimony. And we do have Carol Carroll here in Juneau. She doesn't really want to testify, but she's here to answer questions if needed from DNR. And we have Ken Taylor. If you'd like to step forward and... Ben, you'd like to testify and give your name and affiliation for the record and begin your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Ken Taylor. I'm the Director of the Habitat and Restoration Division for the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. I didn't prepare a testimony today, and I came primarily to voice concerns that the department had with some aspects of the committee substitute that came over to this committee. I didn't have the work draft in front of me at the time, and it looks to me as though this committee is put a tremendous amount of effort into addressing some of the points that I was going to make. Our concerns surround the disposal of lands that are either in legislatively designated areas, such as critical habitat areas, refuges, or sanctuaries, or other areas that the department has worked through some process with DNR or perhaps a borough, any other entity, to identify areas that are important for fish and wildlife values or important as access points for people to access those resources. And it appears as though the committee has addressed some of those, which I haven't had a chance to read very carefully. So I can't speak to the changes that you've made at this time, but I do commend the committee for taking that effort.
Okay, are there any questions for Mr. Taylor?
I would have a question for you, Madam Chair. Do we have a Resources Committee CS before? This one? Okay. And it's been adopted? Okay, thanks.
Okay, thank you for your testimony. And we're going to move over to back to teleconference. We have in Anchorage, Cliff Ames.
Thank you very much. My name is Cliff Eames. I'm with the Alaska Center for the Environment. We have offices in Anchorage and the Mat-Su Valley, and our membership includes almost 10,000 households. The Center for the Environment has, over the years, consistently opposed proposals to provide additional land for the University of Alaska, in spite of our strong support for the university. We believe that such a transfer would create more conflicts and problems than it would solve. We were heavily involved in the attempts to resolve the Mental Health Land Trust situation, and we've been involved in several land exchange attempts that would have transferred public domain land into private or quasi-private ownership, and there's just been a huge amount of conflict and, as we all know, a significant amount of litigation as well. We, too, have just seen the committee substitute, so I'm not really prepared to comment on the details, but what I will do is raise some of the concerns that we've had with past bills and that we are almost certainly we will almost certainly have with the substitute. We have some question about whether a proposal might be an unconstitutional dedication of funds, and even if it is a legal disposal, we have some question whether it might nevertheless violate the very wise policy behind dedicating funds. We don't believe that it's wise to devote a substantial part of our resource base to a single entity and remove the opportunity through the yearly appropriation process to make decisions about what's most important at any particular time or what entity or project or facility has access to funding at any particular time. Also concerned about the effect on the public land use planning process. A number of us spent many years working on land use plans throughout the state, and a disposal like this would nullify much of that work. We believe that in spite of the attempt to ensure access to these lands, that it would in fact reduce or eliminate a variety of existing public uses or the quality of those public uses. It could adversely affect fish and wildlife, although we were pleased to see the new provision that should reduce at least some of those impacts. I think all of us know how important healthy populations of fish and wildlife are to Alaskans for subsistence and commercial and sport purposes. As other people have pointed out, these disposals and the subsequent development would create conflicts for rural residents, for remote cabin owners, and for recreationists. And finally, this proposal would reduce public participation in the management of these lands. We doubt that the public participation opportunities when lands are identified would be fully adequate for something as controversial as this, and we feel very confident that once the lands are in the hands of the university, that the public would play a very, very small role in managing lands that presently it's able to influence through the DNR's public processes. We would rather see the university funded through general funds. There might be something that the state could do to build a strong private endowment for the university. They might be able to provide some assistance, perhaps with some sorts of tax credits or something. And I would point out also that many conservationists, if not all of them, do believe that it would be wise to take a look at an income tax for the state in order to raise sufficient revenues to fund important programs. Thank you very much.
Madam Chair.
Representative Barnes on that point.
Well, on his testimony. You raised the issue of the constitutionality of the legislature being able to transfer these lands under the authority of the Appropriation Act, and I would simply direct his attention to Article 8, Section 9, which says, sales and grants subject to the provisions of this section, the legislature may provide for the sale or grant of state lands or interest therein and establish sales procedures, and it goes on. So obviously, if the legislature chose to pass this bill, it certainly has the authority to do so. And the question goes back to an issue that was before the Supreme Court in the Byrne Homestead Initiative, where the courts held that it was the Homestead Initiative was a disposal of a state asset, thus only the legislature could do that. And certainly if the legislature wishes to dispose of the land, they have every right to do so. Whether I agree with this bill or not is immaterial.
Thank you, Representative Barnes. Do you have a...
No.
Okay. Representative Cowdery.
Yeah, you know, I would just like your opinion of what we, you know, you're aware that we're running a big deficit now in income versus our expenditures, I hope.
And, yes, I am.
And so if we fund everything, including the university, that everybody asked for, what would you recommend that we don't fund? I mean, I assume, you know, do you want to defund DEC? Do you want to defund Department of Law, you know, or public safety or education? I'd just like to know what you think we should do. I know you say income taxes, but if My figures are, my information is right, income tax would produce about $260 million a year. So we've got a $600 million or $700 million deficit. So do you have any ideas where we should find the money?
Well, I'm not sure where the income tax figure came from. I hadn't seen that, so I'd need to explore that further. But we at least would have some additional revenues. And then, although I'm not terribly, I haven't discussed this with Sue Schrader or others, Sue raised the possibility that there might be public support for particular uses of portions of the permanent fund. So I guess that's a possibility. It might be that people wouldn't want a certain amount of it diverted, say, to the general fund or to certain other purposes, but maybe the public would support it to fund the university. I don't know, but that's something else that we could at least look into.
I don't believe that. I mean, it gets right back. It goes in the general fund. We have to appropriate, I think, but we still got the deficit of, say, $600 or $700 million, and that's, you know, I've looked at things at every source of revenue that's been suggested.
Thanks,
Mike. We still got a lot of things to figure out. And the people spoke very loudly when we asked them last year, should they have a right, we asked them to vote on whether we should use any of the earnings. I think that was loud and clear that they don't want to do that. So that's just a comment.
Are there any other questions for Mr. Ames?
Or do we have anybody from the university scheduled to testify?
We do have Wendy Redmond.
Yeah.
Okay, well, hearing no other questions, we're going to move on with our testimony. Thank you for your time, Mr. Ames. I'd like to move on to Mr. Taylor from the Alaska Municipal League. Okay, he isn't here. Dick Bishop.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Dick Bishop. I'm Vice President of the Alaska Outdoor Council, on whose behalf I'll be testifying today. I appreciate the opportunity to do so. The Outdoor Council has followed this bill for a number of years, and it's gratifying to us to see the changes that have been made in the course of that time. When we first became aware of the bill, it may have been around earlier than we were aware of it, but one of the first things we noticed was that although there were a number of protections written into it for states' interests of various kinds, such as oil and gas and minerals and so on. There were few, if any, specific references to consideration of the public values of habitat, public access, and uses of resources such as fishing, hunting, and trapping. And so kind of at the 11th hour in one year, the year that we became aware of it, we suggested that some of those changes be made. And I may have become a little bit of a nuisance to some of the legislators over this, and I apologize for that, but I'm pleased to see that as of today that a number of those changes have been incorporated into the bill. And I'm also pleased to hear that others who have a strong interest in environmental issues and public access and public lands, habitats, and so on, are supporting the changes that have been made in this bill, which I think we contributed significantly to achieving. So I want to thank the prime sponsor for his consideration and his staff in working with us to try to get those particular references in there, and to the university representatives we worked with and to your staff. The Outdoor Council does support the concept of enhancing the self-sufficiency of the university, and we hope that the potential of a significant university-owned land base will contribute to that goal. But our, as I mentioned, our interests and concerns relate to ensuring that these important public purposes of state lands, waters, and resources are not seriously compromised, and that the extremely important public values of prime fish and wildlife habitats, public access to lands and waters, and fishing, hunting, and trapping are recognized and accommodated. We have reviewed the House Resources Committee substitute for SB 7, and it appears that our interests and concerns have been adequately addressed. I think that, in our view, if the spirit as well as the letter of the law are followed by all participants, our interest in these highly important public values and opportunities will certainly be accommodated, and it seems that the university's interest should be covered as well. So we would certainly support passage of this bill, and I'd be happy to attempt to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Bishop. Are there any questions or comments?
Thank you.
Hearing none, thank you for your testimony. We have one more on teleconference, I believe. Wendy Redman, are you there, please?
Yes, I am, Madam Chair.
Would you like to testify on Senate Bill 7?
Well, Madam Chair, I won't take your time with testimony again. I think all of you have heard me ad nauseum over the years on this bill, but I would like to answer a series of questions that came up during other areas of testimony, if that would be appropriate.
Oh, yes, that would be great. Thank you, Wendy, if you could go ahead.
Okay, if I could start, one of the questions was, what were the university's priorities for management of its land? And I will get a copy to you. The land management report just came out yesterday, and I'll bring copies of that with me to Juneau. But basically, there are the four top priorities are, first of all, to identify and dispose of non-appreciating assets. Secondly, to actively develop university land consistent with market demands. Third, to increase the pool of developable land. And fourth, to acquire additional urban commercial property and land resources with near-term development potential. The report itself goes into a great deal of detail on exactly what we're doing on each of those areas, so I'll get that to you for your information. A question came up on the annual receipts and what we're generating on the property that we have right now, which is about 150,000 acres. We currently have a land grant. The endowment is $102 million. Last year, we generated about $8 million in earnings on those lands. One of the questions that came up, I guess it was a comment, while I'm on that, Susan Schrader from the Alaska Conservation Voters said that the university had liquidated its timberland in Yagataga, and I just want to report we've actually only cut 12% of the timber in the Gulf Coast at this point. So I just wanted to correct that bit of information. Mr. Leffler with the Division of Lands had quite a few points that were of interest to me, and I mean, this is a judgment call, I guess, but the issue having to do with competition with municipalities, we attempted to cover that in the bill. As you know, on page 6, current municipalities or expected municipalities or land that the commissioner reasonably believes might ever be part of a municipal land selection are off limits for us. So that's pretty broad language of protection that the commissioner has. Secondly, as you'll notice on page 4, the commissioner and the governor have total control over what lands are even available to the university to select. And there is no opportunity for appeal by the university. The governor is the final word on this. So there is a high level of administrative control over what lands are ever going to be available to us. We would certainly hope that the governor doesn't use that to make sure that there's never any land available, but that's a possibility. The question came up in Mr. Leffler's testimony of the subsurface rights, and I understand he's new to his job, so we'll get him information. That has been researched by many lawyers over time, and I think Representative Barnes alluded to this. The university is a pre-statehood agency. Lands that are university land grant lands are not subject to the same provisions. We do, in fact, have subsurface rights on certain of our lands. Also, he mentioned the money that would be used for managing the lands, and I just want to highlight again that there are no general funds used to manage university lands. All management costs come from the proceeds of the land itself. And the gentleman from Fish and Game indicated something about legislatively designated areas. Those are excluded in the bill and have been from the very first bill. There are a couple of issues that continue to come up. The constitutionality question that James brought up is another issue, again, that has been researched, and there are several documents written on that, which I'd be glad to give the committee. It is, in fact, never been shown that this would be an unconstitutional conveyance of land. As Representative Barnes said, the legislature may convey land to whomever they please. The final point, I guess, that I'd like to make is that the university, when we started looking for land again, we took a brief hiatus there of about a decade between our land hunts. It is an effort on the part of the university to try to find some small way to be self-sustaining. I would agree, however, with most everyone who has testified in opposition to the land grant that land is not a panacea for the university. We would much prefer to have money. Land is a very long-term investment. It will not solve the problems of the university, whether you gave us 250,000 acres or 5 million acres. It simply is not, there is not that kind of generation capability on the land that's currently available to be able to support the university. But it could provide a small and significant annual stream of revenue to be able to do some of the kinds of programming that you and we would like to see the university do. So if you have any further questions that I didn't answer, I'd be glad to take a crack at it.
Hey, are there any questions for Wendy? Hearing none, Wendy, thank you for your testimony. Is there anybody in the audience that would like to testify on Senate Bill 7? Is there anyone else out on teleconference that we may have overlooked? Hearing none, I'm going to close the public testimony. And I do have an amendment that I would like to offer. And this amendment would be on page 4. Lines 26 through 28. On line 26, a list of selections submitted shall, after shall, not will be added. And shall not be considered approved or conveyance to the University of Alaska, and we'll take the if out and replace that with unless. The legislator acts to approve, so we'll be getting rid of does not disapprove. So the new sentence will be, after shall, the word not will be put in. So it will read, a list of selections submitted shall not be considered approved for conveyance to the University of Alaska unless the legislator acts to approve the list during the legislative session during which the list was submitted. Is there any objection to the amendment? Hearing none, then the amendment is adopted. Is there any discussion on the bill?
You said to move the bill?
I would like to hold it for one for the next scheduled meeting.
Okay.
We just got the CS adopted and take it back up at the next meeting that we have scheduled.
Thank you.
So are there any discussions or questions regarding the bill?
Madam Chair? I would just like to state for the record, thank you. That I'm at this time not in favor of seeing this bill leave committee because there have been a couple other issues that I think do weigh in. Like school construction came up, and there was a senator from Fairbanks who said that rural areas need to provide money to build the schools if he's going to, you know, move to see the school construction bond package go through the legislature in order for those of the people in my area that we'd need to form a borough. And I see this bill as being not the most advantageous for us. If we haven't selected borough land, and like North Slope Borough and Northwest Arctic Slope Borough, they haven't even selected all of their land. So I don't think this is the best thing for my region right now. And not that I'm in any way opposed to funding the university system. I have the distinction of having gone to every branch of the university in the state of Alaska, UAF, UAA, and UAS, and I'm very much in favor of seeing that we fund university to whatever extent they need to be funded, but I'm not sure that this is the best way for our university system to be funded right now. And I know that we have fiscal problems. I'm very well aware of that. But I just wanted to put that on the record.
Okay, thank you, Representative Kastner. Well, hearing none other comments, then our next meeting is Wednesday, February 9th at 1 p.m. And with that, I'm going to adjourn the meeting.